Welcome to the Tradies in Business podcast with your hosts, Warwick Bidwell and Nicole Cox. Divert your phone and grab a brew as Waz and Nick unpack tips, tales, secrets and stuff-ups from guests both inside and outside your trade, helping educate and inspire you to break the cycle of gut-busting and money stress and create a true trade business.
G'day listeners and hello to Nicole Cox.
Hello, Warwick Bidwell.
I don't know if anybody knows their real names, actually.
They do now. We've told them.
Hey, no, I don't know how to do your name in a Kiwi accent.
Nicole no, I can't Cox. Help you.
It's just the same.
My stepmother was Bidwell? From New Zealand and she still sounded the same.
Yeah. We don't really have names that get stuffed up with a Kiwi accent.
Not really.
No. So, in case you hadn't guessed, we're talking to a Kiwi today.
Yes, we are.
Sweet as, bro.
Sweet as. Jada bars, chili buns.
Chili buns. And
Jandals.
And Rangewoods.
And Rangewoods.
So, we put the call out to get another real tradie guys interview. And turns out that it's actually one of our trade desk members on today's episode. So you actually get to hear what some of our trade desk premium members get up to and the sorts of things that they're doing in their business and the results they're getting. So James and Linda Berryman of JKB Installs down there in the South Island in Christchurch, installing Rangewoods. I didn't know there was such a thing because here in Oz, I'm pretty sure the builders just whack them in, don't they?
Well, I can speak with some authority here and say it's the worst task of all.
Is it as bad as cleaning the bloody things?
No, I'd rather clean.
Righto.
Yep, I'll clean five before I install one.
Yeah, right.
They are a pain.
Yeah. Well, so these guys specialise in installing Rangewoods.
It's amazing, isn't
it? It's mind-blowing.
Isn't it?
They've made a whole business out of it in New Zealand.
Yeah. Like, in a small...
There's only, what, 200,000 people and 2 million sheep or something? I don't know.
We're going to go there.
I just did.
Poor James.
Anyway, it was a good chat with James.
Good chat.
And him and his wife are doing some really cool stuff. Young couple down there. Just doing things a bit differently. Mm. And they're taking the stuff that they're learning and applying it. So always awesome to see trade deskers doing that. It's always nice to hear from real tradies.
We love our real tradies.
Yeah, even ones from New Zealand.
Even ones from across the ditch.
Sweet as proof. So joining us on the Tradies in Business podcast today for another real tradie guy's story.
I hope he's a guy.
Insight is James Berryman. How are you, James?
I'm good. Thank you very much, guys. It's nice to be on board.
Great, mate. Now, thanks for sort of dialing in all the way across the ditch.
The ditch.
Don't you love it when Aussies...
I've got to balance you guys out, eh?
Don't you guys just love it when Aussies try and take the puss out of your accent?
Oh, yeah. Well, we do it to you guys too. So
well, that's true.
It goes both ways. It's the Tasman rivalry, you know?
Yeah.
True.
Cars, all the rest of it. We're always at each other.
That was something I noticed when I travelled to UNZ a little while ago. Well, it was a bunch of years ago. Was they just hooked into you straight away.
Mm.
Probably didn't help that I was in Queenstown. But it was just constant. And then travelled around the South Island and everywhere I went, as soon as I opened my mouth and spoke, pretty much they are India.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm just getting my own back, mate.
And you're going to wear it, James, whether you like it or
yeah,
not.
Yeah, that's right. Even though it's not your fault.
Are you in the North Island or the South Island, James?
South Island, yeah. So I'm in Christchurch, so right in the middle of the South Island.
Nice, mate.
It's a good spot.
My stepmother grew up in New Zealand. She's from New Zealand.
Yep.
Was before she passed away. But we did a tour back with my dad. Oh, my God, there's a podcast about that. But we did a tour after she passed away. We came over to spread her ashes. I think it's in Lake Brunner. And then we came back to Christchurch and spent a bit of time there because she, her adult life was spent there. Nice. When she lived there. Anyway, I forget what I was trying to say, but you're right about the whole sledging thing. The second you get off the plane, they're India. It's actually, even on the plane, they're India. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, my sister lives in, she's in Manly.
Yes.
And she's got a little bit of a Aussie accent now. So, yeah, we give her heaps.
Oh, your poor sister.
Yeah.
But we're not here to talk about accents, are we?
Absolutely.
We're here for you to spill the beans, mate, I'm gonna have to have a chop at a few Kiwi accents throughout this.
No, you're not allowed to now.
Okay. But you're here to spill the beans a bit as a real tradie guy. So we get a lot of great feedback about these episodes, and our listeners like to hear from other tradies, other real tradies, yep, instead of Coxies and my own brand of insights into
rubbish
business.
Yep.
And so, mate, can you tell our listeners a bit about your business, but also, I guess, a bit about yourself, and you should probably talk about Linda as well.
She's the one that got you in this mess.
Yeah,
yeah, well, she did, and I sort of had her on for a while that she needed to be part of this, and it just wound her up no end.
She's not really a public speaking type of gal, is she?
She isn't, and I milked it, and she was really about to divorce me over it. So my name's James, and we started up a range hood installation business probably about four years ago, sort of started to actually sort of get more into it. It was sort of a one-off, and then a couple of months later we did one. And I'm builder by trade, so did my apprenticeship, also did my first year in diploma in architecture. And then after sort of the architecture thing, I was like, I actually don't know all these things about studs and dwangs and lintels and stuff. So I thought, well, how about I learn about them on the building site? So did that. Went over to the UK, was a site foreman, site manager over there for a couple of years. It was really awesome. Came back just after the earthquakes. So I was over in London for the earthquakes, and came back and went back to building for a while. And I was kind of like, this is cool, but I'm just not really in love with it anymore. I still do like building, but I was kind of like, well, time for a bit of a change. And so started to pick up on this little bit of a niche market that sort of came up, and people made some comments, like, 'cause it's like listening to people and trying to pick up on these little things. And they sort of said, well, we want someone to do our range because we hate doing them. And I get that from the builders, from plumbers, from electricians, from all sorts of people. And, you know, I started getting into it, and the more I discovered that people were getting really terrible jobs done by various people. Not everyone, of course, does a bad job, but and I was like, well, hey, this is something I can work with. And sort of just, yeah, got more into it, talked to retail and got on board with them, because they obviously love to sell a product, but they don't want the customers coming back and going, this is a crap product, you know. So the most important thing is get it installed right and the customers are happy. And then also same, I guess, with their new homeowners, they can, you know, use their oven and their fridge and stuff like that, but they do their cooking and they turn on their range and it's going, rowdy. And they hate it. And it's kind of like, well, you know, everyone wants the quietest and they want something that actually works. And often it's just an afterthought, the range hoods, and it still is tending to be a little bit that way, but it's slowly becoming a bit more on people's list of important things to make sure they get right when they actually do their kitchen. Because I mean, everyone says the kitchen and bathroom is the heart of the home, you know, it's sort of the money shot, you know, in terms of the areas in the house. And people put, you know, terrible things that don't work and are rowdy in there. So especially open plan all these days, I'm sure you guys have got open plan, sitting at your couch trying to watch the footy or something, and the wife's got the range hood blaring away, and you're having a bit of a competition who can win. And you know, it comes across to the bathroom as well. You know, you're trying there having a nice relaxing time, and you've got this bloody thing roaring away. So it's basically my little bit, and just getting into working out awesome little ways to tweak things and make things better. Little systems we've got and products that we've developed to make the roof penetrations 100% secure and make them nice and neat so that people actually want to have them on the roof and things like that. Because we do things slightly different to you guys. We have to have a proprietary flashing up on the roof. So people go, oh, I don't want something on my roof, it's going to leak. But we go, no, not here. It's going to be awesome. So that's the key, really, giving people security. And, yeah, that's pretty much it. You guys, yeah.
So, you're saying Aussies are pretty rough, mate, when it comes to flashing?
Oh, no, I wouldn't say that. We've just got different regulations.
Nicely handled, mate. Nicely handled.
We probably have a bit more. I mean, we're a little teeny island way down by Antarctica, right? So we get wind and rain and snow and all sorts. It can be in one day. So
yeah,
I guess we've got to cover that off, you know. So yeah, I mean, each their own. I guess I'm always looking for something that's going to be 100%.
Mm.
You know, try and go for 110 and get 100. So that's always good to do it that way.
Yep. I'm fascinated, as Warwick and I go to compete, to ask a question. Yeah. It's not like Aussies to compete over asking a question, is it? I'm really fascinated by the niche that you've chosen instead of building, because it's bloody brilliant, in short, number one.
Yeah.
But number two, you said it earlier when you were talking, but it was about listening to the pain points and the complaints and then figuring out a way that you could fix what they're complaining about, which makes you a commodity that we all require rather than, you know, I don't know, the afterthought like you said it was. Yeah. Was it when you were in those very first stages of thinking about how you wanted to do a niche business rather than a whole building business, and even then there's niches within building, but with finding this really fine niche that you found, did you do some market testing? Did you talk to people? How did you arrive at the decision that this was the right niche for you?
Oh, I sort of really just jumped in, I guess, to some extent. I guess I did one job. So Angela, I did my building apprenticeship with Eddie Tarrant, and his wife works for Parex, who distributes Schwagen here. So they're an awesome product, and they're a bit special with an external motor and things like that. And she approached me to do one because she knew that I'm, you know, pretty clever. And I did one, and then she was like, "Oh man, I need you to do more." And I thought, "Oh, okay, well, that's pretty cool." And I sort of initially went into the likes of Harvey Norman and some of those crowds,
sure,
and sort of said, "Look, you guys sell these products. Who installs them?" And I said, "Oh, I don't really know. We just sell them, and they sort of go out the door, and we get quite a few come back, people complaining about them, and you know, these tricky ones, you know, that's bringing them back and swapping them for something that's really low quality because it's just easy."
Mm.
And, so from there, I thought, well, actually, this might have some legs. And the more I talked to these retailers, the more they said, "God, come on, come and do this work for us. We're real keen to get you on board and try and." I mean, obviously, they want me to make their job easier. So they were like pretty keen to get me on board. And then it's just been a case of talking to obviously the builders, the joiners, and the electricians, and all those guys. And people want someone to do that job because they don't like it.
Yeah.
which is weird. I love it, which is cool. I just love the fact that I can get into a kitchen and someone turns it on. Like, we just came from a job today and we put a Schwagen in his place, and he turned it on. You could barely even tell it was on. He was just the smile and the, you know, he was just like, "And you guys are just legends," and that's kind of all worth it then, you know?
Yeah. So,
yeah.
There's a lot of joy in being a finishing trade, and by that I mean, you know, those last people on the job, the painters, the floor polishers, the range hood installers, the people that get to do the things that finish off the job perfectly. There's a lot of joy. There's a lot of feedback. It's a nice space to work in.
It can definitely go two ways. If you're not good at finishing, and then that's the coating, like, the, you know, the final coat of paint, and then it's really crap.
Yeah,
that doesn't matter what's underneath it.
That's just true.
Crap. So
that's very true.
It's important to get it right.
Absolutely. Yep.
So what's been some of the hurdles that you've come up against in starting a business like this, James?
Obviously, first of all, I'm a builder by trade. I didn't do a business degree or marketing or networking, you know. I didn't do anything like that. I sort of struggled through school, really, and I was very much more of a hands-on person. So actually learning about these things has been the hardest, I think. It's just changing your mindset and trying to get systems in place and do that sort of stuff. And just also, I guess, talking to people as well. I mean, I can talk forever, as you probably guys have noticed. Once you get me started, it's not too hard to keep going. But making sure that your information is clear and concise as well. Which is always a struggle because I tend to yabber on forever and people zone out within that first couple of minutes if you're not to the point and telling them what they want to hear kind of thing. Yeah. So that's been really tricky. And I guess the next thing in terms of my business, is the way the systems work now with someone wants a house built, there'll be a PC sum for, say, the electrician to run some ducting, and then the joiner, part of his kitchen contract will be to fit the rain shut off. And I'm trying to insert myself into that mix, and traditionally trying to break the tradition is obviously a really tricky thing. So that's probably, I guess, not so much business orientated, but what we are trying to tackle in the business is quite hard as well. So still an ongoing process, but we're getting there.
You're re-educating, I suppose, and you're re-educating a part of the market that traditionally doesn't like education. So it is a bit of a battle.
Yep. Yeah. Yep, absolutely. And some people don't like being told what to do or what's better. When you I got called out to a job which was actually they gave me the wrong address, and I saw that the ranger wasn't connected and the roof penetration didn't meet the current building standards.
Oh, no.
I rang the project manager and he said, "Oh no, that's just the way we always do it." And the building inspectors never pick it up. And I said, "But is that the right way to sort of be thinking about it?"
Yeah.
You know, surely, you know, you should be doing things compliant. And he just didn't want to have a bar of it. And it's a struggle sometimes, eh?
It's often the mentality that you're dealing with, and they're the people you're trying to change to get to think the way that you think, which is professional and to code, for starters. It's about...
Well, that's why it's in place, right, to make sure things are going to last. And
that's right. Take care of the consumer. Yep. Sometimes we're at the end of the list, though, aren't we?
Yeah.
So how do you deal with that attitude in the industry, mate? Like, if you know, you guys obviously are about excellence and educating consumers, perhaps, as well as the other trades. Yeah. How do you balance that with the need to make money in a business?
Yeah, that's a tricky one.
You've got to be careful. Mark.
Yeah, that is a big question. I guess it's whatever I'm talking about needs to be the right information, and it needs to make sense. And if they see that you're, you know, credible, if you like, then they'll sort of start to take that on board. Sometimes, obviously, it's like you're just chipping away, one chip, one conversation, and then you might go to one of their jobs and fix up a job of theirs, and it might happen three or four times, and then suddenly they'll click and go, actually, we'll get this guy on, and then the whole process isn't a problem. It's just we get it done right, and it's easy. So some people are pretty easily converted, and some people aren't, and you just have to be patient. You have to just, hey, you know, without, you know, getting on their case and saying, hey, you guys are doing a real shit job here, you really need to get us on board. You kind of just got to chip away and say, hey, if you want any information or you want a hand, you know, once, you know, just free, you know, you want to have a discussion or you got an issue on a job, please give me a call. Sometimes it does take time to work through that stuff, but then one day they'll come around and it's sort of just offering, I guess, a bit of advice and free of service, and they eventually come around.
It's playing the long game, isn't it?
You have to. You can't roll in there and go, I'm a legend, I'll just do it, everything perfect for you, and pay me now quick. And it doesn't quite work like that. No, things take time. As I say, we started doing ranges about 5 years ago, and we're far from like a polished business, if you like. We're still learning a whole lot, and we're still working on people for the last, you know, 2-3 years to be honest. So as I say, a tradition of trying to change what people think is just
hard work.
A big task.
Have you ever questioned your sanity, mate, and thought it'd be easier just to go work for someone else?
All the time. No, my wife tells me stories. I was catching up with my girlfriend, and he's a project manager site foreman of this building company, and he's getting 80K a year and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And I'm going, fuck, well, what's just and he's going home and taking his work hat off and just doing his own thing. But at the end of the day, there's obviously benefits, you know. I guess, first of all, you know, your phone bill's paid by the business, and you get your truck and, you know, you get paid and all that sort of stuff. And I can just sort of go, well, actually, I'm going to take the afternoon off and talk to these awesome guys on a podcast, and I can do that.
What was the name of that podcast, mate? We'll have to get on it too. Don't name the competitors, mate. Yeah.
Bloody Kiwis, so they're always quick, aren't
flexibility,
they?
And I have had this discussion a few times with people and saying, you know, I sort of go, I'm just like that at Tia Mahira and go, why am I doing this? But I think you've got to sort of flip it around and go, well, actually, I'm in control of what I'm doing.
Mm. Mm.
And my I'm in business for my family, you know, for my kids and my wife and also for me. And they're the top of the pile, and work is sort of somewhere down the bottom. So it's like you're saying with, you know, time blocking, you've just got to time block your own time out and just say, look, hey, work will be there tomorrow. It'll be there next week. It'll be there in a month's time. The important part is the family. So I guess, you know, being able to go to gymnastics with the kids during the day and all that sort of stuff is the most important part, really. So that's key for me. And I guess if I was working for someone, you probably wouldn't have that sort of flexibility, you know. So I guess that's why we do it. And if you said it was for the money, well, it's definitely not for the money. So, well, not at this point anyway. I'd like to say it would become a bit better, but at this stage, it's more of a, I guess, trying to strike a balance with lifestyle, which is just so tricky because you get sucked in. People ring you up and say, I need this job done tomorrow. And you kind of go, oh, all right then. But sometimes you just need to go, oh, my next appointment's next week, midweek. So that's when I'll do it for you.
It's a good point you bring up, and Coxie and I were talking about this in another episode recently. Mm. Why do you do that? Why do you sort of, you know, someone rings up and says, oh, can you come out this afternoon? You go, oh, yeah, okay.
Well, I mean, I've started doing that less. I had a lady ring me up today and say, oh, I need you there, like, this afternoon. And I was like, well, I'm really sorry, but I can't make it this afternoon. I'm busy, and I can fit you in early next week. Oh. No, but at the end of the day, I'll show up there early next week and it just won't be a problem. Mm. I guess myself, I'm a bit of a people pleaser. I like to make people happy and not let them down. So you kind of, if people ask for something, you kind of try and do it to make them happy. Mm. I don't know why. just the way it sort of goes. But and I guess it comes down to work as well. You get busy, and then what I've learned pretty quickly, you take on too much work and the quality goes down, and people get pissed off because you're not there on time, all the sort of stuff, and then suddenly your reputation and stuff goes down. But if you actually just tell them straight up, you're like, hey, I'm 2 weeks out, I'm three weeks out, most people are prepared to wait, and if they're not, they're probably not worth carrying on with, you know what I mean? So but it just takes time. Like I said, I mean, I've been in business for a while now and still learning. it's still a process of learning and just realizing that you know, you can't please everyone at the end of the day.
You certainly can't.
Yep. No.
No.
Is there anything you wish you knew when you started that you didn't? You know, stuff you've picked up along the way or things you've come across. Like, is there anything you wish you knew when you started out in business?
Tell you what, from day one, I think if I had been part of trades and business, that probably would be the number one thing. I mean, through you guys, we've learned, you know, we've got Facebook up and running and we've got that, was it the 3-month thing or 4-month thing? I can't remember now.
Yeah, yeah.
The process.
Yep.
And that's it. Because you go into, so I didn't do a business degree or anything, so no idea, just doing work for people. But having some sort of form of structure to follow as a template or a guideline has been super helpful. I can't stress it enough because, as I say, I haven't done a business degree, and just having something written down to go, oh, well, let's just follow this. We've got that done. We haven't got that. And we've got that one done. We haven't got that one done. And just working through that process, and then it just makes it easier in your head because then you can itemize things out instead of just going, we need to do, you know, sign writing, business cards, Facebook, website, need to systems, and you're going, and then suddenly it just never happens because it's still too much.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. So yep.
I would say that's probably the biggest one for me. And, you know, along with that comes, you know, you learning how to use Xero or my MOOB, whoever you use, and being able to spell your emails quickly, grammar, you know, just those just sorts use of Grammarly, things. Mate.
Yeah. There's a handy app called Grammarly. It saved me many a time.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, probably, yeah, so having you guys, if I was starting a business again, I'd say that'd be my first thing to nail down and get sorted. It gives you a clear direction. And if I had that 5 years ago, would have been
sorry to make you feel painful there, mate.
A lot of pain out, but I guess, you know, if you're not making mistakes, you're probably not going to learn. So
absolutely,
we made probably more, I wouldn't say mistakes, but you know, we probably made more cock ups than we needed to. But until you make them, you kind of don't realize that it's a cock up. So doing that sort of stuff. So
love it.
Yep, that'd be the biggest difference.
I would imagine in your current capacity, what you're doing now with the Rangewoods, that you would be relying pretty heavily on a network of people to be talking to regularly to try and begin that education process that we've been talking about.
Yes. Yep.
Can you tell me about your network of people and how you found them?
Okay. So obviously the first one that was the first sort of port of call when we started in business was the retail guys. So it's the people on the floor at the Noel Lemmings, the Smith & Church, all those outlets. They change hands pretty quick for staff in it. So you've got to keep doing that. I think it's sort of every couple of months we try and get into them because obviously if we let them know what we do, then they can tell people what we do and we can help them out. And it's kind of a, you know, it works for them. The person leaves going, well, we've got some good information. We know who can do this job properly. And then I get work too. So that works really well. And probably about 5 or 6 months ago, joined up to BNI, the networking group here. And that's been really cool. Now, when I first started it, someone said to me, just look at it as more of a, a personal growth sort of thing, not necessarily a business tool at the moment in terms of getting work. And I think that was probably the best thing that was ever said to me, because I'd say I've got like 2 or 3 jobs so far out of BNI directly. But what I've actually learned from those other people in the group, it's like having a chat with you guys now and you pick up little tidbits. And you pick up tidbits from everyone. And then these people that you've talked to, I've been going to a few different groups recently. And people going, oh, where have you been my life? And they start to talk to other people and start to pick up cues from different, you know, interior designers, builders, architects, and all that sort of stuff. And the networking just, you know, slowly starts to evolve and get bigger over time. It doesn't happen overnight. You got to keep chipping away, and it just slowly starts to come to fruition. Like we've got a few things in the works with property managers here, and we've got some new regulations regarding getting exhaust air out and stuff like bathrooms and kitchens and stuff like that. So that's becoming a thing that all landlords have to have. So just getting those connections with those sorts of people. And then I guess as well, networking through like Facebook and stuff like that, just meeting people and talking and trying to have the conversations, really. So it's been a learning curve. I always struggle to get up in front of people and talk. And I think that's really helped in that sense too. Because at the start they have a 60 seconds, you get 60 seconds to introduce yourself and tell you what you do. And I think it's really important, because you might only have 60 seconds to talk to someone, and you've got to tell them who you are, what you do, what you can bring for them, and sort of just summarize it up in 60 seconds. So if they run away, they know everything that you can do and bring to them. So it's been really, really important. And just also, I guess, helping out other people, just listening to other people's problems and going, oh, yeah, my car bloody wouldn't start the other day. And you go, well, actually, I know a guy, you know, and hoping that other people will do that for you. Oh, that bloody range had around at this guy's, you know, place for dinner the other night, and it was bloody beer, you know, blaring away. And you just chipping away, really, at the networking sort of thing. So there's lots of networking groups around, so you've just got to hunt them out and find them and get amongst it.
Absolutely.
I think it's the number one way to grow your business in a short period of time. It is still a long game, like any kind of advertising or marketing, But you're like, you've just expressed it perfectly when you say that, you know, you're talking to a mate down the street and his car wouldn't start today. So you recommended somebody that you'd met through networking. You know that everybody else is invested in doing that same sort of thing for you. And there's nothing quite like a personal recommendation to particularly some sort of tradie.
Yeah,
it's huge.
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah. I mean, you can read an advert or something that, you know, you go, oh, okay, that's what they do. But when someone just says, hey, look, this guy's awesome, you know, cleaned up, was there on time, you know, just super helpful, went the extra mile, that person's probably just going to use you without getting other quotes and whatever else. So, yeah, it's key. It's really key. So, we work really hard on that. I've been to 3 BNIs this week in the morning, at getting up at, you know, 6 o'clock and rolling down there and talking to strangers. But it's definitely an important thing to do. I would recommend it to everyone. I didn't see the importance of it, honestly, at the start. I just was like, what? Now the work's coming in and it's good, but you've got to plan for the future. You know, there might be a little bit of a dip in the market, you know, and if you're just relying on retail guys giving your cards out, well, you're going to go downhill, and you need to make sure you can stick with it through that slump.
Yep. I'm interested to know how you've had to change your thinking as a business owner, because we see a lot of trades that, I guess, they go from having a trade to having a trade business, and it's a very different mindset. So I'm just always curious to know how individuals like yourself have maybe had to change the way you think.
I guess right from the word go, when I did my building apprenticeship, I kind of wanted to be the man in charge, to be honest.
You wanted to be the boss, mate.
I sort of wanted to, pretty much. So I sort of wanted to be, I wanted to get enough skills, obviously, because you have to start somewhere. And I learned that and just kept my head down. And got up, you know, through the ranks, and eventually, obviously, went into the project management sort of site foreman side of things, and I really enjoyed it. It was sort of where I was sort of comfortable, and obviously, you see a lot of project managers and stuff that can't manage projects, and I just try and, you know, the communication and stuff is the key. So I guess I sort of always had that mindset from the start, so it wasn't too much of a hard transition to sort of be in business as such. Does that kind of make sense?
And that's why I'm curious, because like some people, they've been in business for 20 years, but they still think like a worker, and to them, you know, the only time that they're really being valuable or productive is when they're on the tools, basically, and it seems to be a hard transition for a lot of tradespeople is to sit in an office doing what we're doing now and feel like they're actually doing something worthwhile.
Yeah. Look, to be honest, I still do. I struggle with that a little bit. You know, like, I like to be out on the tools and that. I'd rather be doing that than sitting and doing spreadsheets and trying to book people in. And, you know, luckily Linda does an awesome job in the office. Like, I'd be basically lost without her, to be honest. But she takes care of a great percentage of that. So it's definitely really helpful, I think someone said to me, you're working in your business and working on your business are two different things. So if you continue to work in your business, you'll continue to work in your business, and you'll be like that guy that just is 20 years in business but still just slogging away on the tools. I think the thing changed for me, I mean, I've always had staff up to, you know, 6-8 people, and now I'm just, there's just me and one guy, Josh. He's awesome. And I think it's trying to set yourself a little bit more, so if you have if you're sick or you're crook or you want to go on holiday, you can do that. Whereas if you're on the tools, if you go, well, then it stops, doesn't it? You know, sort of, that's it. So you sort of want to take yourself, and if I was to not be at work tomorrow, can things still run? And if you're just working in the business, it would stop, it would grind to a halt, and it just wouldn't happen. Like, I just had back surgery 3 months ago, and I was kind of like, well, shit's going to just stop, right?
Yeah.
But no, with a staff member with the right sort of things in place, right systems, and well, they're not perfect yet, but they're getting there, and that sort of stuff in place, then you can actually take a step back and work on the business in that period of time. So, yeah, just stop working in the business a bit. And you can't work on the business when you're in the business. Mm. You need to take a step back and go, that can tick away, because I could probably spend a whole week just working on systems, going around customers, drumming up business, and nothing would get done. But you need to be doing that.
Mm.
If you don't do that, you next week or the month after is going to have no work. So
that's right.
It's really important to make that time. And I guess, yeah, I mean, I guess it was that kind of comment, work on the business, not in it. That was probably one of the sort of like, what does this actually mean? And then sort of just going from there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's something as I always work for. So it hasn't been like a big step or change.
James, we know, but you have also mentioned in the podcast that your lovely wife, Linda, works with you. I'm intrigued as a builder's wife who works with my husband.
Yeah. Yes.
How that has all played out for you guys. Was it an easy transition to be working together? Is it something you've done before? Is this only something you're doing now? Tell us a bit about that.
Oh, where do I start? I think working with your partner is just always going to be hard. It's something you've got to try and work on all the time, because like she's always saying to me, you wouldn't talk to your staff like that, would you? You know, and I'm like, well, that's true sometimes. So Linda's a hairdresser by trade, again, so no business sort of background. Sure. So it has been a learning process for the both of us. Mm. So we've got a couple of kids, Harley and Sadie, and one on the way, so not too far away.
Exciting times.
And when she stopped hairdressing, she sort of was like, I've had enough. And I said, well, you know, I've got a business and I need help, so why don't you just do that? And then it gives you the flexibility to be at home, look after the kids, and you don't have to pay for daycare and all that sort of stuff. So we started down that road, and she has obviously learned a lot of stuff, you know, just the job booking software, Excel, Xero. It's been a lot. And she's very patient with me, which is good. just making time, I guess, and not trying to make not time from, you know, 10 o'clock at night to 12,
yeah.
You know, try and make it in the afternoon when your tears are, you know, a bit longer and things like that. You can sort of keep a handle on things.
Yes.
Yep.
I think it definitely is tricky.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to, I could explain that one. It's definitely hard, but we're both working for the same goal. So yes. I think that sort of pulls us together, and we're like, well, yeah, we're sure we might lose a rag at each other sometimes and go, oh, bugger this, you know, you can do it yourself.
Yeah.
But then in 10 minutes, you'd sit them back down, sort of wading through it again. And
I think it's a gift. And I, you know, it's not always been a smooth ride for us in business either, but it's a real gift to be working together as life partners towards a common goal. And not everybody gets that opportunity. And plenty of people think they wouldn't like it. But the truth is, yep, it's bloody hard. Some days are easier than others, but it's a real gift to work alongside that person you trust more than anyone. It's a nice thing to do to grow together. You are growing and learning together rather than separate. I think it's bloody awesome.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I could see it going a different way, to be honest. You know, like as I say, you know, it's just the trust thing. Obviously, I know that she's going to take care of it and all that sort of stuff. And we, you know, bounce ideas off each other. You know, through the learning curve, we're just following that same curve. So it's been pretty cool, actually. And you just start to see a real other side of people when you get the screws turned on, and you know, you sort of put in some troublesome spots sometimes, but you just get on with it and you make it happen. So
absolutely.
So even like I don't think I could go back and work for someone.
No,
I'm as working with. You know, I thought about, oh, maybe we should get an office person in and just get them to do all that sort of stuff. So, no, it's work. I wouldn't change it. But, yeah, it's a challenge. And it's going to be a challenge, I think, forever. Yes. To be honest.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
There's positives and negatives to it.
Definitely.
And
like anything, eh? Mm. Yeah.
Yep. Do you guys have any agreements that you keep between yourselves that are part of being able to continue doing it that way?
Not really. No, not that I can really think of. No. We're obviously trying to do things during the day and not at night. That's that's kind of the biggest and probably the hardest one.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, get the kids off to bed and then suddenly, like, sitting down at the table gets a bit old pretty quick.
Yeah.
Yep. So,
again, it comes back to time blocking, making time, and just not telling that person that you'll do their job at 2 o'clock or something, and just going home and doing that work.
Yeah.
And also, I guess another hard thing is we are working from home, so the garage is full of stock, and the table that I'm sitting at now is our office. It's quite sometimes hard to switch the brain into business at home too. So it can be tricky at times too, but. That seems to work
right. Yeah, great, mate. So probably the last one from me is the future. Obviously, the future for you is going to be a little busier with another another kid on the way, mate. But deep breaths. At least you can escape to work, mate.
Yes.
That's right, yeah. I leave the office lady at home and I can do some jobs, yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, what do you think the future of sort of building and construction looks like, and then maybe the future for your business? Because I think there's still a lot of parallels between Australia and New Zealand in that regard, as far as the construction industries. Yeah. But what changes do you see coming, mate?
I mean, we've had a lot of artificial stimulation with the earthquakes. So we've been riding sort of 6 years or so of kind of like this artificial workload, you know, that's come on because there's been houses that have been knocked down and people having to relocate and all that sort of stuff. And we've sort of come back into the real world now, where normal sort of levels are, I guess, normal. And then, you know, talking to retail, especially because, you know, people, if they don't have money, they won't spend money in retail, notice that pretty quickly. So I'm always talking to those guys about what's happening. And it's a downward trend at the moment. So things are tightening up, which also is a twofold thing for me because, you know, if the Sparky who would normally get us to do the range needs that work, well, he might hold on to it himself. So I guess it makes it more challenging for us too, but more important to continue to do really good work and get lots of great referrals and keep it going. So construction, I mean, in Christchurch, because I mean, there's other areas in New Zealand that are still strong, like Queenstown and stuff like that, hugely driven by the location, how it's just sought after locations and stuff. So I think we're going to still go down a bit and there's going to be a few builders going and things like that, people laying off staff and, you know, sounds a bit terrible, but it's just the reality of the ups and downs of business. And for me, look, I've got a staff member on and I want to get him busy and I want to work more on my business. So I want to be doing more of the on stuff and promoting our business and, you know, upskilling and visiting, you know, more people. And eventually, I guess down the track, I'd love to get on another person, you know, and sort of have a couple of guys and just even be more on the business, you know, do the hard jobs maybe if they come up and stuff like that, but just try and grow it so that it's just can keep ticking over really. And if I go away, like we want to go to Germany next year with, you know, see my wife's parents and that and take the kids over there. So, you know, talking, you can't go there for a couple of weeks because it's a bloody long way. So you're sort of like 4 or 5 weeks, you know, sort of minimum. And you need things to keep running or else, you know, you come back and you might not notice the effect straight away, but, you know, a bit further down you'll be going, oh, shit, we've got no money. So, just wanted to get to that point, really. I'm not sort of in too terribly looking forward to, like, you know, dominating New Zealand or you know, getting across the ditch and being this massive company. I want to keep it quite niche and just do really quality work, really, at the end of the day. So, yeah. That's the goal. I'd like a little bit more freedom and, just to be able to step back a little bit. But if you have a business, there's no such thing as stepping away from your business.
It doesn't exist.
And as soon as you do, it'll go downhill.
No such thing as passive income.
No, nope. It's a crock.
No, it is. Nope. It's made up.
It is made up. You've got to work
it. It's definitely a made up thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The jobs change and the things on the to-do list change as a business owner and as you mature in business, but you still have to work.
Yeah.
Mm.
You know, there's still time that needs to be put in to have a successful business. So.
Mm. Yeah. And I think being a small business, people are kind of part of the job is they're sold on me, you know.
Yes.
So if I'm not, maybe making that contact or seeing the job once it's finished or just a follow-up phone call or something like that, then they kind of go, well, I've sold you and I've got this. So I guess, and I think it comes to finding a balance between those two things too, because you can't always be there. You've got to rely on your staff, and they'll represent you really well. So that's also part of the game.
Mm. Mm. I agree.
Yep.
So, mate, imagine you've got hundreds of thousands of people listening to this episode right now.
Oh, way to make a man nervous. Sorry, James, don't listen to him.
What's one thing you think every tradie should know, mate?
Another one of these massive questions you ask people.
Jeepers, you really know how to get it, don't you? What should everyone know? Time blocking.
How many times have you watched that video in the trade desk, mate?
Probably that. It's just making time for things, really, because you just get carried away sometimes. And if you don't make time for things, they get forgotten, they get missed, and then your business gets swamped. Or just make time for things. I think that's quite a big thing. We're always searching for time, but it doesn't. The day never gets longer. You just have to prioritize your time better. And things will improve if you make the time for things.
Absolutely.
If that makes sense.
Does.
I mean, there's lots of things that I could say are important, but itemizing time is really important. You've got to be on the tools and you've got to be doing, work on your business too.
I totally agree.
And you got to sleep too.
Well, sometimes.
Apparently.
Yeah, they say so.
Yeah.
I think you need time for wine. I always bring back to wine somehow. It's got to be some time for wine. I block out time for wine a couple times a week.
Yep, nice. Mm. Yep. Perfect.
It's important to me.
And the beautiful thing about this, James, is we've recorded it so we can play it back to him in the trade desk. Anytime Linda jumps in there and says, James has gone missing.
Remember time blocking, James.
Remember time blocking.
Yeah. Well, mate.
I'm still working on it.
Oh, yeah, you're doing a great job. You guys, I'm really impressed with how you guys are kicking goals.
Yeah.
You are awesome. Some of our standout trade desk members. You constantly show up. You're doing the work. You're taking it on board and getting it done. It's impressive.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I'm glad you guys are around, to be honest.
Thank you.
It's been awesome. As I say, we went down a slightly different route with having some help, and you guys are just worth your weight in gold. So it's been a pleasure, to be honest.
Thank you very much.
Awesome, mate. Great to have you as a member. And mate, for people who want to go stalk you now and check out what you guys are up to, what's the best place to find you online?
So Facebook, JKB Installs. You can just dial us up there, and if you've got any questions or, you just want to hit us up or whatever, just drop us a line on there. Website, jkbinstalls.co.nz. We've got some content going up on there and a few bits and pieces, so if you want to know about me and that sort of jazz, you can jump on there. Obviously, if you're in New Zealand, you can give me a call, or even in Australia, I guess, give me a call, or pop in and visit, or we can arrange a catch-up on your site or anything like that.
Awesome.
Yep.
Awesome, mate. And we'll put all those in the show notes for our listeners. So, mate, thanks very much for jumping on today.
No problem.
It's been great to have a chat. It was nice to meet a Kiwi who doesn't just take the mick out of us Aussies all the time.
I didn't hear any Kiwi accent.
No, you were really, really, really well behaved.
I bit my tongue.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. You did it well. I can see the blood dripping out of the corner of your mouth.
I was nearly going to ask you what your favourite meal is, and I was hoping you were going to say fish and chips, but
fish and chips.
I decided not to.
I just like that you call an esky a chili bin.
A chili bin.
And don't you... Oh,
a thong. thong?
A thong. Yep. You've got jandals. And your speed bumps are called judder bars.
Some people call them judder bars.
So it's not commonly called judder bar?
No. Sort of, it's like a 50-50.
You tried to spring, Coxie tried to spring that on me a while ago, mate. I did. Said, oh, the Kiwis call these judder bars. I was like, do they?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're advertising.
It's probably a 50-50 split, judder bars or speed bumps, yeah.
we'll have to do another episode just with like a glossary of terms for anyone traveling to UNZAD.
Yeah, so we can understand each other. Yeah, that sounds good. Perfect.
It's great talking to you, James. Thanks for your time.
Thanks very much, mate. We look forward to seeing big things from you guys in the trade desk.
Yeah, we'll keep working on it.
Righto.
See you guys.
Cheers, buddy.
Bye. Catch up. Bye.
You've been listening to the Tradies in Business podcast with Warwick Bidwell and Nicole Cox. Find out more about today's guest, tools for your trade business, and other cool stuff at tradiesinbusiness.com.au.